is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Alexander Solzhenitsyn, a man who dominated the latter part of the 20th century when I was reading him, a man who wrote nonfiction and fiction, who wrote from history, his history. And I welcome someone to help me tell that story, because here we are at war with Russia in some fashion. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was at war with Russia in another fashion in his lifetime. He first served the country, and then he fought the country. I welcome Richard Reinsch, the editor-in-chief of Civitas. This is a think tank at the University of Texas, as well as a publication, Civitas Institute. I recommend highly, and Richard has done us a favor of writing a review and an analysis of a recent collection of Solzhenitsyn's speeches, remarks, entirely after he was exiled from his mother Russia. He did return after the fall of the Soviets, and yet still all these decades later, there is the compelling need to understand what Solzhenitsyn was telling us about his country and about our country as well. Richard, congratulations and a very good evening to you. Who was Alexander Solzhenitsyn? What do the young people need to know of our memory, 20th century men that we were? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, and thank you for having me on your program and for the opportunity to talk about Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was born under the Soviet Union and served the Red Army, was in East Germany serving in 1945, had been fighting the entire war when he was sent to the Gulag, in effect to Soviet prison camps, for, in effect, cracking jokes about Joseph Stalin, for making light of the tyrannical ruler of the Soviet Union. And he went to spend from 1945 to about 1953 time in what became known as the Gulag, the Soviet prison camp system. He served in Siberia, various other places. He was in what is now Kazakhstan for a while, which was at the time a Soviet state. And then also kind of spent some time in exile, you might say, inside the Soviet Union, not allowed to return to his home, the region around where he grew up. And suffered tremendously, and suffers tremendously in the camps, and comes out of that experience very much a changed man, which he writes about. He goes in kind of an arrogant young officer who had been brutal at times in the war, and through a period of a path of suffering inside the Gulag, and a path of learning from the suffering about what it means to be a human person, to be a human person under God, and to think about human responsibility and human virtue amidst everything that the Soviet Union had done to his country and to himself and to his fellow inmates. He changes. He has a profound spiritual experience, and then he gets out and begins to write about it. And it's, what we know in the West right now, the most profound literary output from that experience is the Gulag Archipelago, which was first published in 1974, portions of it in Paris, in Russian. And then from that point forward, Solzhenitsyn's life begins to change dramatically in terms of the blowback inflicted on him by Soviet authorities.
The book that I first read was Solzhenitsyn's book about Ivan Denisovich, Zek, that's what they called the men who were condemned, the men and women, Zek, who went through one day of extreme cold and extreme hunger and extreme desperation, got through one day. I remember, wasn't prepared for it, but as I read it, I not only became hungry and cold, I marveled that this was a science fiction story. He had to be making it up. What's your memory of reading that book, Richard?
I've read that book multiple times. The first time was in a seminar when I was an undergrad. And then I had experiences after that, which, I think a lot of people who have gone on to read in depth about Solzhenitsyn start with that short story. It was published during sort of a period of, we might say, relative openness under Khrushchev. And he thought, mistakenly, that the book was an anti-Stalin tale. It was sort of about Stalin's brutality, But the book was deeply anti-communist and anti-Soviet. And I, as I remember reading through the book, it's a testimony to the human spirit, because Ivan Denisovich is under tremendous stress in this one day we experience it. The cold, as you mentioned, the brutality of the system he's operating in. And yet his spirit is not broken. And that is, that becomes, I think, something that the testimony of man's spirit, and which is then a testimony to human freedom and human conscience, that becomes Solzhenitsyn's sort of gateway into the West. The book became sort of an international literary event at that time, and it was an open scandal inside the Soviet Union.
What I remember particularly about it was how it was necessary to be fastidious in their endeavor to do everything precisely, as if they were creating, oh, I don't know, something of a genius product. In fact, they were, I think, cutting wood or doing something mundane.
Building a wall or something, yeah.
Yes, and how those who were not attentive to the details of their day withered and died, and that it was necessary to focus on your work that day and to focus on the food that you had, the little that you had. It was extremely impressive. I had no preparation for it. Did you, Richard, did you know what you were going to read when you started it?
No, only through, there's various sort of anti, say prison memoirs, Darkness at Noon. Whitaker Chambers never was in the gulag, but he writes about the inhumanity of the communist system. In terms of an experience of someone inside the gulag, it was unique and arresting, you're right.
The gulag itself is a semi-researched and greatly remembered experience. Again, I tell an experience that I remember when I read your essay, Richard. It took me back to it, which was an anecdote that those of us in the gulag were eager for an atomic war that ended the planet because we'd be free.
Yeah. No, that's an amazing observation. There's also Solzhenitsyn saying later in some of these speeches, the occasion by peace was Notre Dame Press bringing out his exile speeches and speeches he gave after he was exiled from the Soviet Union in 1974 till he returned 20 years later. And Solzhenitsyn says, when we were in the camps, we looked with West, with a certain amount of hope, with a certain amount of, would you be a sort of freedom's champion, this champion of the human spirit? And Solzhenitsyn said, when he, I think he's still in the camps and learns of a visit somehow of the British Prime Minister to the Soviet Union, who gives, some comments. And Solzhenitsyn was struck down by the comments. He was brought low because they were so banal and weak and sort of refusing to really defend the West against the Soviet Union and sort of, muddling over things. And this is an experience that will trace Solzhenitsyn's observations of the West for most of his life, is looking with hope to the West and being frequently disappointed in how it confronted Soviet communism.
The title of the book from the University of Notre Dame Press is We Have Ceased to See the Purpose. It's a volume that has been annotated by one of Solzhenitsyn's sons, Ignat Solzhenitsyn. We're going to turn to Solzhenitsyn, thrown out of the Soviet Union in 1974, moving to Vermont, a small town in Vermont, and his measure of the West, his disappointment of the West that he'd venerated when he was in the camps. Richard Reinsch is the editor-in-chief of Civitas, the Civitas Institute, publishing essays and comments and analysis of the Constitution, of our daily lives. I'm John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest, building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving, it's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey. You're hearing from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.